for the people around the person struggling with depression or struggling with addiction, there's that reflex to help, or there's that reflex to fix and solve the problem. And more often than not, that's not really what's needed at that moment. You know, what's more often that's needed is, you know, demonstrating some kind of understanding or a willingness to try to understand.
Welcome to the Sandstone Care Podcast, where we help teens, young adults, and their families overcome the challenges that come with substance use, addiction, and mental health conditions. Welcome to the Sandstone Care Podcast with me, Clint Malley. Today, I am joined by Peter King. He is the program director at the North Bethesda office in Maryland, and he also has experience as a primary therapist. But today, he's going to be talking to us all about the connection, and there is a huge connection between mental health and substance use. So first of all, Peter, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me, Clint. Glad to be here.
Awesome. So let's do some warm up with this. You know, how does alcohol and drugs affect mental health?
So that's a really good question. And when we're looking at alcohol or drugs, like we really need to factor in mental health into the conversation, because so often alcohol and drugs are a way to self-medicate. And so, you know, it's really about finding some type of relief. And I'll talk about this a little bit more as we go, but alcohol and drugs really overall worsen mental health over time.
Hmm. And so let's dive into that a little bit deeper. So when you talk about how they worsen mental health, right? Like, what are some of the mental health problems that are sometimes connected with problematic substance use? So when you're thinking about people who are developing these problems, what are those problems specifically around substance use?
Sure. It can be all different sorts of mental health disorders. Most often we see mood disorders like depression or bipolar. You know, we also see anxiety. We see thought disorders, maybe some, you know, even psychosis or schizophrenia. And more often than not, there's some history of trauma in somebody's life. And so they might be, you know, looking at a PTSD diagnosis, or they may be, you know, having some signs of PTSD that are really like interfering with their life.
Mm. So let's hone in on, you know, two of these mental health conditions that might occur, which is depression and anxiety. So, you know, how might substance use make depression and anxiety worse?
That's a great question. So In the immediate, in the short term, there may be some relief from those symptoms of depression and anxiety. And that's where a lot of adolescents or a lot of young adults may say, you know, smoking weed helps me or drinking helps me. And I don't see why I need to stop or why I should stop. And there can be some relief because there's a rush of dopamine and serotonin from the substance and from the high. Now, what that does over time is it damages those neurotransmitters of serotonin and dopamine. And so it makes the brain produce them less, because the brain will say, let me ask you, Clint, have you ever gotten into a car or walked into a room and turned on a TV or a radio and the volume was up way too loud?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Happened.
I think it's happened to me too. And what's the first thing that you do?
You turn it down.
Exactly, exactly. And that's what the brain does over time with substances. When the brain is, you know, flooded with dopamine and it's like too much too fast. And it's like, okay, the brain is like, I see that you got this on your own. I'm going to dial it back. I'm going to turn this down. And so the brain creates less of it. It lasts for less time in the brain. And even the receptors, when those messengers get sent, they get damaged. And so you're not feeling, or someone is not feeling the same effect from serotonin and dopamine as they would without, you know, without using substances.
And so I can imagine, so, you know, you bring up a good point. People use these substances because they work, right?
Right, right.
At least in that short term,
yes.
Right? And, you know, I've talked with other folks and they've said that this is a lot about control, right?
Definitely.
I feel this way. I don't want to feel this way.
Right.
So I want to do something that will change the way I feel.
Definitely.
Right? And substances will change the way that you feel.
Absolutely.
Right?
That's how they're designed.
Right. And so when we're thinking about substance use and depression, anxiety specifically, mm-hmm. it may not be a problem at first, but there will be like a slow decline, right?
Yes.
So, you know, what are the signs that, okay, this is my substance use problem in relation to my mental health issues is actually, it's worsening or it's causing serious mental health problems. Like, what are we looking for here?
Some of those signs, the main ones that come out are increased isolation, you know, and so really cutting themselves off from their family, their friends, their community. Other factors to look for are loss of pleasure, like loss of pleasure from, you know, things that were previously enjoyed or like things that somebody liked to do. There's also, you know, there can be a loss of motivation. There can be overall, you know, lower sad mood more often than not. And that's what we look at with depression and anxiety. We look at, you know, what is the pattern and what's happening more often than not. And, you know, over like, a 2-week period or, you know, 6 months, you know, let's look at what's happening more often than not. And the isolation, sorry, I repeat myself sometimes. So the isolation, the, you know, loss of pleasure. There can also be like some feelings of worthlessness or some feelings of, you know, maybe like excessive guilt, like more guilt than is healthy or necessary.
I was going to mention how shame might be a part of that, right? So when you think about isolation, one of the reasons we isolate ourselves is because we feel ashamed.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And so one can cause the other or vice versa.
Right.
And so, you know, when we're thinking about depression especially, why is isolation such a negative thing for somebody when they're trying to overcome depression?
Right. The biggest thing with that is that, you know, as human beings, we're not designed to live in isolation, and we don't tend to do well in, you know, if we're cut off from other people. You know, especially from people who are nurturing, people who are supportive, and so that it really has a destructive impact on us. You know, if we are, you know, either self-imposed, cutting ourselves off, or unfortunately, what we see is that family and friends may distance themselves from somebody with depression. You know, and they may feel helpless themselves, or they may not know how to help or how to, you know, to cope with it. And so it just goes against our really how we're wired and like our nature.
Mm. So this is a tricky question. It's almost like a chicken and the egg question.
Sure.
Right? So, you know, what comes first, depression or substance use?
That is tricky. And I get asked a lot of tricky questions from our clients, from our families. It really depends on the individual. And it really depends. So if we're looking at substance use, there can be all different reasons for when or why somebody starts using a substance. And it may be, you know, it may be curiosity. You know, maybe, hey, I saw my friends, you know, getting high, or I saw my friends doing whatever and it looks fun and I want to try it, or I've read about it, heard about it. Sometimes like starting a substance can be, like I said, like self-medication. And so, you know, if somebody's feeling really extremely low, and I don't mean just like, you know, we're human, we all feel low sometimes, but this is like exceedingly low. And when somebody feels that, you know, they use the substance to try to restore some kind of balance or like some type of, you know, homeostasis in their body, in their mind. And so, like I said, it's different for each person. You know, for some people, the depression may come first. For some people, the depression may be a result of really extensive substance use. Like I was saying, of the serotonin and dopamine being damaged, that can result in depression itself.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, so what are some of the long-term effects? So say I start using substance use and my substance use stays the same, but my mental health conditions get worse, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the long-term effects of untreated mental health conditions?
Yeah, there are a lot of just a lot of really damaging, destructive long-term effects. I mean, first of all, shorter lifespan. You know, if a mental health disorder is not managed, people can even live for decades less than somebody either who does not have a mental health disorder or who has one and is managing it. So for life itself, and quality of life too, you know, quality of life with maybe, you know, damaged relationships or with, you know, lost passions. There can be, yeah, a lot of damage and destruction if the mental health disorder is not managed. And what I always tell the clients that we work with is that, you know, it's not your fault for having the addiction. It's not your fault for having, you know, the diagnosis of depression, anxiety. It's how you choose to respond to it. And it's if you choose to respond to it. And you made a good point earlier that the drugs are going to work. You know, the drugs are going to change how someone feels. And it's a similar thing with, you know, with these conditions that we're talking about, is that they are going to work, and they're not going to work. I mean, they're going to have those effects on our bodies and on our minds. And then it's really about, you know, what action can we take? You know, what can we do?
Mm. And when I think about depression, I know I've heard people who have described depression as like weather, right? Mm. Like it just comes.
Yeah.
And you just kind of have to wait for it to pass.
Mm.
Is that a healthy way to look at depression, or is depression really the result of, you know, something that's unaddressed or something that hasn't been figured out? I know, especially when we think about parents and we think about relationships.
Sure.
We think about how oftentimes the husband or the spouse or whoever will try and fix the problem that they see that the spouse is going through, right?
Right.
Or the parent will, you know, try to fix the problem that they see their child is going through.
Yeah.
You know, but if depression isn't something that's fixable, or if it's not something that's treatable, if it is just like weather, then you just kind of have to wait it out. So, you know, from your experience and your opinion, is depression something that is innate that we're just born with, or is it something that we develop and that we can treat?
So I'll answer it first saying that depression is absolutely a condition that can be treated. Now, you know, if we're looking at addiction or we're looking at depression, we're not really looking at a cure. You know, it's not like, you know, taking penicillin or taking antibiotics and then being able to wipe out an infection. You know, it's really addiction and depression really take long-term work, and they are manageable and they are treatable. People can inherit like a predisposition for it. And so, you know, especially we see in families where if a parent or say a grandparent has a mental health disorder or has an addiction, there is a genetic predisposition that people can inherit. Now, that's not a guarantee that somebody will, you know, have depression or be born with depression, because it's, you know, our genes, we interact with our environment all the time. And so, you know, based on someone's life experiences, right? Like if somebody, you know, let's say that somebody grows up in a really, you know, secure household, you know, secure attachment, you know, there's a lot of love, a lot of affection. Those are protective factors against depression developing. Now, if somebody grows up in an environment where there's a lot of chaos, or maybe a parent is dealing with their own depression, their own struggle, and they're not as available for the kid, we see a higher, much higher likelihood of depression developing. And a lot of depression does happen, you know, in the context of relationships. You know, like depression can be worsened if there's like a romantic breakup or if there's, you know, loss of a friendship or distancing of friendships. And so I wouldn't say that it's innate, but I would say that, you know, the potential is there. And then how somebody interacts with the environment, and I would say how the environment interacts with them too, really plays out if, you know, if that happens.
Which is encouraging for parents
and
for spouses. Really, anybody who knows somebody who is understandably depressed, right?
Sure.
Or has gone through something, an event, a trauma, a trigger that has caused depression.
Right.
So, you know, closing up here, is depression like addiction?
You know, I had never really thought about it that way, but I think that in some ways it's similar. In some ways it's similar because for the people around the person struggling with depression or struggling with addiction, there's that reflex to help or there's that reflex to fix and solve the problem. And more often than not, that's not really what's needed at that moment. You know, what's more often that's needed is, you know, demonstrating some kind of understanding or a willingness to try to understand what's going on. And, you know, for people who have not experienced depression or not experienced addiction, it's really, really almost impossible to tell. You really can't tell firsthand what that's like, you know, if someone has not experienced depression or experienced addiction. And that's where empathy comes in. And so I think empathy is needed for both, you know, for depression and for anxiety. You know, I was also thinking about that with depression and anxiety, there's a certain kind of status quo that can exist with that. You know, like with addiction, maybe it's, you know, this is just my life. You know, I'm just chasing this high. I'm just chasing this substance. And deep down, I know my life is out of control. And deep down, I know that, you know, my life is not how I want it to look. And the use and the addiction itself is clouding all sorts of judgment and is clouding all sorts of any kind of perception of reality. And then with depression, you know, it's a similar thing of like, this is the status quo. You know, I just feel empty, or I just feel worthless, or like with a sad mood. And I can't imagine anything being any different. And so there is a kind of like, you know, there can be some sort of like resignation, like to both of them, I think. And there can be a getting used to that. And both are also really manageable conditions. There's really not much willpower involved in either one, you know, with depression or anxiety. And I think the willpower can come in with what somebody stopping and saying, what path do I want to continue down? You know, do I want to continue down a path of misery and suffering and, you know, chaos? Or, you know, do I want to maybe consider what other options are? You know, do I want to consider what other options are for trying to cope differently, or for, you know, practicing acceptance of this is a condition I have and I'm able to work with it. Not but, and I'm able to work with it.
Yeah. And even if it's not in those extremes,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
There's that mediocreness.
Right.
Where we get settled into a level of complacency.
Yeah.
And I love how you kind of compared it to like there is this acceptable form of it, right?
Right.
We have the caffeine with coffee, right?
Yeah.
Or like, you know, the mommy juice. Like I just have wine, you know,
right,
every evening or
right,
whatever. And we all have these things that are culturally acceptable and that mm-hmm, we think are normal and
yeah,
that we think are okay. Like, is it okay to come home after a hard day and to like kind of de-stress by drinking or
right,
having a drink, right?
Right.
And so to some level, most people would say yes,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But we tend to look at depression very differently.
Yeah.
Like we would not say to somebody like, hey, you know, it's okay to be depressed, a little depressed,
right?
Because
right,
depression is this feeling of just not feeling, of having no amount of feeling, and you feel very alone and isolated and empty.
Right.
And so we wouldn't want anybody to feel even a little bit of that, right?
Yeah.
So it's an interesting comparison. And I think that's one that's worth exploring more.
Sure.
It probably hasn't been researched quite enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's enough to know that there's definitely this huge connection between
right,
the two.
Right, right.
So Peter, you know, for our listeners at home or our mm-hmm, watchers, what is the thing that you want them to know when it comes to substance abuse and yeah, mental health? Like, what are you hoping that they get out of a conversation like this?
Really, what I'm hoping people get is that there's hope. You know, that you know, nobody has to be resigned to living with the damage and the destruction of, you know, of addiction or of depression or other mental health disorders, that there is hope and that the brain has a remarkable ability to recover, you know, even with that damage that can be done to serotonin and dopamine. With time away from a substance or time with healthy relationships or with, you know, healthy activities, those can be restored and you know, new pathways in the brain can be formed. So my message to everybody and everybody who we serve at Sandstone, everybody in the community, is that there is hope.
I love it. You heard it here. Guys, if you're struggling with depression or anxiety or substance use or all three
mm-hmm,
in some combination, you need to seek some support. It's not something that you should have to go through alone. I'll drop some links in the show notes and in the description box of different places that you can call if you are wondering if you might be depressed. Also a questionnaire to be able to determine, okay, has this become a problem for me? And ways that you can like kind of self-diagnose that within yourself that maybe I do need some support.
Sure.
And by the way, if you're probably wondering if you need some support, chances are you need some support, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Peter, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you, Clint. Great to be here.
Awesome. Listeners, we will see you on the next episode. If you want to learn more about treatment options for you, your teen, or young adult, then tell us about your situation on a confidential call using the number in the show notes or live chat with us at sandstonecare.com. We'll connect you with the treatment that you need, and if we're not the right fit, we'll get you where you need to go. Be well, and remember that change is possible.